From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 16, Episode 6. This week, Bob was joined by Delia D'Ambra to discuss her incredible podcast, Counterclock. Today, Bob and I are joined again by our incredible co-host, Janet Varney. The gang is back together, and we are here to answer your listener questions. JV, we missed you. I'm happy you're back.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, I mean, I told you this in a text, and I mentioned on the pregame, but I wanted to still listen to the full pregame and the full follow-up last week, not just to stay caught up, but because, you know, you're a real part of my every week, and I feel the absence. So, and I heard that people were concerned and asking questions about, you know, Southern California and wanting to make sure I was okay and everything. So I just want to give everyone a very heartfelt shout out and a thank you for thinking about that. And, you know, it's a long road to hoe. We're okay. I'm in San Francisco now, but really appreciate people being concerned and all the good feelings out there.
Yeah. And Janet, we are so glad to have you back. And I'm sure, well, I know that when you listened to last week, you heard the kind of nonsense that Zach and I get up to when you're not around. And we've already been scolded yes. via text message. Something about our dingbats talking about donuts.
I said I'm listening like to you two ding-dongs talking about donuts.
Yeah. All right, guys, we don't have many questions for this week's episode, so it'll be probably pretty short and sweet, and, you know, Janet's busy. It's been kind of a weird week for Zach and I, because it's, you know, we had MLK Day, no school this week, and then we had not a snow day, but a 25 below zero, too cold to go to the bus stop day yesterday and today, which is Wednesday. So hasn't been in school all week. I think the schedule's a little wonky. Been getting a lot of other stuff done. Been getting us caught up with episodes ahead, which at the end we'll talk about what we got coming up. But I do want to just take a minute to talk to you guys a little bit about where we're at with our season 17 case. I'm still calling it potential, but it's looking good. So I told you guys a couple weeks ago, I had several meetings with several lawyers talking about the case. They did send us the case file. Erica has been fully through the entire trial record, has summarized all of that, and she recommended us moving forward with that after her review of the trial record. So that's looking good. She's now going through different elements of the police file to start breaking those things down and comparing. So we have certain questions about how things shook out. That's looking good. Did hear from the attorney yesterday, and they said that it sounds like they have discussed this with the person that is in prison, and they are all for it. The attorneys that I've been working with, they are all for it. Now they have to, there's like one more level above them, it sounds like they need to get the final approval on what everything looks like moving forward. But it's looking like our season 17 case is all but selected. If not, we've done a whole lot of reading about a case that you guys aren't going to hear about. That's going well. I'm super excited to get into that one.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
We don't have a whole lot of questions this week, so we're going to go ahead and get through those and talk about the information about Delia's case. And we're going to talk a little bit about trip I took this week with my students, because I know people are interested in that when those podcasts are coming out. But first and foremost, what'd you guys think of the Delia episode?
Oh, I thought it was great. I've definitely listened to, I am behind one season. So the season that you guys were talking a little bit about is the one season that I'm like, oh no, I haven't gotten to it yet. And I know there's a bunch of episodes and it's a doozy. But yeah, I've really enjoyed the work that Delia has done. And it was fun to hear you guys have a conversation again. And, you know, it's always interesting, like, similar to recent conversations that you've had with other podcasters and other investigators and other journalists, it's always interesting to hear where there's overlap and then where there are unique differences. Where, you know, I mean, I love being a fly on the wall for those types of conversations. And similar to the Australian, right, the guy that you were talking to, who's had this kind of
Ryan,
I blanked, but, you know, having that participation with a detective, or, you know, just having that one person on the quote unquote inside who is like helping you move through a case is just so, still feels so unusual for so many of us. And so it's always interesting to hear about that. And there are some really, the couple of comments and questions that we do have are really great. And I agree with everyone's people who are interested in hearing about all of the ways that who you are as a person, what you look like, where you come from, like in what way people can relate to you will have such a huge impact on the kind of information that you're, that you can get. And sometimes a thing that people think is going to play against you plays in your favor, like being like a chatty young woman. You know, people might think like, oh, I feel totally comfortable talking to you, and not realize that, like, no, this is a badass and a hard ass. And everything that you're saying is being, is going to be used, whether it's to your advantage or not, if you're, you know, a bad actor in this.
Yeah. And Delia does this. She has one of those faces that she just looks very innocent and sweet, and she's young. And so I love that. But I know we have a question about that. One of the couple questions we have, so I'll wait to dig into it. But yeah, that was a super interesting part of it.
I really like the, when you and Delia start talking about the idea of getting too close to individuals involved.
That was a great part. Great point, Zach.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed that, because obviously I've witnessed it firsthand. I've witnessed you with Ed.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously this worked out really well.
Yeah.
But the conversation you guys had was really nice to hear. And it's interesting because there is that aspect of where's the line and how do you draw that line?
Yeah.
Because there's points where, like, you know, with Ed, how do you draw that line? You talk to him all the time. You were there. I mean, it's tough. You know, you move on. I know you got pretty close to Liz in Sandy's case, you know, talking to Liz multiple times a week, and it's just, it's difficult. So moving forward, for you to have to take yourself and put a line in and say, I cannot cross this line, is gotta be extremely difficult.
It is for me. Liz is a little different situation because, you know, she's on the outside, and like we still talk, you know, and we become close friends. And so like, I feel like I can go through everything that's happening with her as a friend, as opposed to like somebody who's got, like, you become friends with, but they're like, all of their hopes are all resting kind of on your shoulders. Like they're just desperately hoping that you're going to be the one that's going to finally set them free. It's hard. And it is difficult. I have, you know, I don't talk about it much, but you know, I have people that, cases that we've worked before where they're still in prison, where they'll still call and write. And a lot of times it's hard with my schedule, you know, because I'm working so many jobs, I can't pick up the phone when I'm at school. But, you know, where I have those moments where I'm just like, man, I'm just like, I'm still here doing the work, but I'm always afraid of getting so close, because that was so touch and go with Ed. So if you guys think back to season two, when Ed got released, we went through a wave of emotion that week, where in a matter of days, we had DNA testing out, and the DNA testing came back and yielded nothing. And we were kind of at a point where we were like, this is it. Like, this is our last chance. And I remember, like, when that came back, you know, that episode when we found out Ed was free, and Mike captured that moment when I was talking to Allison, when she was telling me, like, just the sobbing on both of our parts. Like, it was, we had just been through sobbing 2 days before that, because it was like, this is it. And, you know, we're going to get him out of here. And then it came back. They're like, there's nothing usable in this DNA. And it was just like, it hurt. So it was like a brother that you just found out you can't help anymore. And that pain in that moment was kind of an awakening for me. And in his case, then 2 days later, it's like, while you're still grieving that, it's like the parole board is setting him free. And just like, oh my God, like, you know, I'm gonna cry thinking about it now. But it has definitely caused me to, where, you know, like Jesse and I, you know, got real close. We talked all the time, but that was during that time when that was happening, right? So I was working on Jesse's case when this happened with Ed's case. And it's one of those where I just, like, always on my mind, but just try to, I don't know if it's the right or wrong thing to do, but it's hard for me to make that connection, because like, not the right phrase for it, but I try to keep everything at arm's length, because I'm just, it's a scary position to be in all the time. I'm too much of an empath, is, you know, if that's a thing, you know, it's too hard on me to do that.
For sure. And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head, whether you meant to or not, which is like, I don't think that there is a right and wrong for the most part. I mean, I think there's might be like an ultimate wrong, like you might be able to identify, like, this is categorically not the right thing to do, or like, you can't do X, Y, Z. And then beyond that, everything is kind of in the gray, because you have to, everybody's different and everybody has a different level of emotional investment, and everybody has a different ability to compartmentalize. And you have to know yourself, and you have to know what you are capable of and what you need to do to protect yourself so that you can move forward and continue doing the work. And that doesn't mean anybody's getting left behind. It just means, like, how will I be able to function and serve the people in my life, including the people from past seasons, that, you know, everyone knows what your intentions are and everyone knows that you're passionate about getting justice for these folks. So, like, you've done the work. The foundation is there. Now it's just about how you keep it going. And that's going to look different for every type of person. And it might be different for Delia. Like, that might be a different level of, you know, emotional investment or whatever, because it, out of necessity for her. The important thing is the work is getting done. And also, I'll say, you know, that's one of the things that's so beautiful about the Truth and Justice Army is that there are wonderful people, we talk about them all the time on this podcast, who have picked up that connection and are showing up for people every day that, you know, are part of our community. And people from past seasons know that, you know, the Jennifers of the world are representative of not just them, but like all of the people that stand behind them and you.
Yeah. And it does. It affects, Susan had just said in the chat that you have to protect yourself so you can keep up helping other people. It is like that's part of it, right? So like taking on a new case, a new thing. And if I have this thing that's like weighing me down over here, then it affects the way that I can look at and act. So, and exactly what you just said, the people we have, you know, we have Kathy
right McLaney now, and Jesse. Yeah.
So close with Jesse. And she said she talked to Jesse today and he's getting really emotional about his case. You know, hopefully we're coming to a conclusion on his case. But that's like part of, you know, and Teresa, who just has been visiting Jody in prison, you know, and that's part of like the crowdsourcing nature of what we do. Like, that's a big part. You always hear me say it, but you don't understand how big of a part of it is. Like, I can't go be best friends with everybody. It's not because I don't want to. I just don't have, it is not even that I don't have the time. It's I don't have the emotional bandwidth to do it. There's too much going on.
Yeah.
So that's like part of like, if part of what we're doing is we're introducing this case and then some of you listeners are then reaching out to these people and so we're like, we're providing that. I feel like we as a team, all of us together, we're providing that emotional support that the people need. And because that's a thing that I just can't give of myself all the time, the way that I used to, because it was dangerous for me to do it that way.
Well, sure. And that's the true nature of like when in a community is successful, is that we're there for each other to kind of help carry that load, you know?
Yeah. I always feel so good when I see, you know, when Teresa posted the other week when, you know, she posted the picture when she went to visit Jody in prison and, you know, took a picture with them. It's just like, it feels so good because it's like, there's like, Jody has that because of the work we're all doing. Jody has that. If Jody has nothing else, Jody has that person. They have their person that's there, that's supporting them, that's being that friend to them. So all of you that, and that's everybody. I always said, like, whenever I get interviewed about the show and like, what does the crowdsourcing mean? It's such a, with the case that we're looking at coming up, you know, the attorneys are asking me, like, what is this crowd? What do you mean by crowdsourcing? What does it look like? I said, it looks like a lot of things. Mm. It looks like people who can pick through crime scene photos and find things that nobody's found before. It looks like people that can read through trial transcripts and police files and make connections that nobody considered before. It looks like people becoming pen pals and becoming friends to the people that are in prison and providing the emotional support that they need. It looks like people who are going to write a check the second we need money for DNA testing or whatever. Or then it looks like people who have some obscure expertise that suddenly comes up in this crime, you know, in this investigation where we need help with something and there's somebody there that knows how to do it. Like, that's what it looks like, nothing I've ever seen before. And that's, it's what I love most about doing this work is the community aspect of it, how everybody's just there. Like, nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. Yeah. And that's the best part of it.
Absolutely. Well, that was a great way. Your conversation with Delia was a great way to kind of reconnect with that and remind us, and, you know, those conversations that you have between seasons or between specific cases, or, you know, as we're waiting on some more material for Jody's case and all of that, being able to touch base with that. And it's both nice to see, to step outside of things for a minute and look at big picture stuff, but it's also nice when you're having these conversations that kind of reminds us why we're all here. So mm-hmm. I thought it was a great conversation, and I love what Delia has been doing. Should we get into a couple of what listeners had to say and ask?
Sure. Yeah.
Great. Okay, so Sarah says, well, she just says she really appreciates having Delia on. She knows that the season 7 case of Counterclock reminds her a lot of Jennifer Jeffley's case. I feel like Jennifer Jeffley's been coming up for us a lot, like, lately. And I don't know. We just keep thinking about her. I really hope there's good stuff happening there.
Yeah, I hope so. I haven't heard anything about her case in a while. What's happened? That case was so tragic, and it was one of those that was so frustrating for me because, you know, Jennifer is the... Like, under any circumstances, Jennifer should not be still in prison today for that crime. Even if she was convicted of what they said she did, a 15-year-old girl keeping lookout for somebody that did this, enough's enough. But I don't think that's even the case what happened. I think she was set up in the whole thing. But yeah, she's another one of those that just never leaves your mind.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, with that one, it was an attorney that came in. I don't want to get into it because it just pisses me off. It pisses me off when that I still remember that attorney telling me is like, oh, you're going to do this whole, you're like, I'm going to have her out by February. I'm like, dude, you don't know what I told the family then, like, this guy has not a fucking clue what he's doing. If he thinks in 2 months, he's going to have her out of prison.
Oh, yeah.
And here we are, what, 3 years later?
Yeah. Ugh. Okay.
I kind of forgot about that, to be honest, until you just brought that up. Mm-hmm. I forgot that happened.
Yeah. I know. And that was just, we were deep into it enough that, you know, people were really, really engaged and we really felt like we were getting somewhere. So, well, we're sending our best to Jennifer. Liz says, this question has actually been ruminating for a couple of weeks from a previous episode where you discussed the importance of asking for a lawyer whenever being questioned by police. Would you recommend taking this advice even at earlier/more informal stages of interaction with law enforcement? Liz, I'm so glad you asked this because I always wonder that too. Like, what level are we talking about when giving a witness statement on scene, filing a police report, etc.? Like, what's the line for you? Because the way you talk about teaching your kiddos, it really seems like it's like, if you want to talk to me at all about anything, period, from the jump, like zero, I want a lawyer. But how, is that true?
First of all, not legal advice. I'm not a lawyer.
Of course.
I think I legally have to make sure I'm making that clear. I don't know, because like it's so hard. With my kids, what I've told them is, first and foremost, do not say a word. And I've told them, in that circumstance, even if you're a witness to something, even if you have nothing to do with it, you're just there as a witness. If the police want to talk to you, first step is, I want my dad here. I'm not saying anything until my dad's here so that I can assess the situation before we go any further with it. I feel like if you are someone who is in no way connected to or thought to be connected to or could not possibly be thought to be connected to it, and you're literally just a witness, then sure. You know, if you're standing across the street and you watch something happen and the police are like, what did you see? This is what I saw. I don't see any problem with that. But I think in any circumstances where you're being talking to the police, where there's any possible way where there could be any implication whatsoever that you could be involved in that situation, that in my opinion, it's no. It's lawyer. I'm not talking to you. It's, am I free to go? If I am, then I'm leaving. And if I'm not, then I want a lawyer. And that's hard to say. Like, I have so many cop friends who just like get frustrated with that. And they're like, well, how are we supposed to solve a case? I'm like, I don't know. Evidence, I guess. Like, you need evidence. I told you at the beginning of this that I got to remember where I'm at because I've done two other interviews that you guys haven't heard yet. But there's one coming up that I'll talk about at the end of the show where we just had, it's like, I'm listening to this case and I'm like, none of those situations where if that person had said lawyer, they would not be in prison. Oof. It's one of those where it's like, in this particular situation, it's like there's this thing, like somebody's seen at a gas station. Completely innocuous would mean nothing to the investigation. The only reason it means something to the investigation is because they gave an interview prior to that and left the gas station out of that narrative. Right. When they're just like, oh, I went and did this and this and this. And then they see, oh, here's evidence. You went to this gas station. Now it's you're lying to us. Oh. And it's presented to a jury as you lied to us. And it's like, what would that have looked like if they had just said lawyer and they never put a statement on the record? And the only evidence they have is that they were at a gas station. It means nothing.
Right.
It's literally the fact that they gave that interview without an attorney present that caused them to get convicted.
Yeah.
So, and to your point, do you guys, you know, I mean, you guys are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you were just like you were saying, if someone's saying, if you have a cop friend who's like, how are we going to solve it? You're not saying I'm not going to talk to you at all. You're just saying, like, I want to do this in a way that protects me per my constitutional rights.
Yeah, I feel like if the questions start asking about you and what you're doing, then you should have an attorney present.
Right.
You know, so if it's like, oh, you were across the street, what did you see? Well, this is what I saw. And if the next question is, so what were you doing leading up to this?
Right.
Nope.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
I'm not doing it. And it's so, the hardest thing is to make people, is to get people to understand in the moment, because it goes against, I think, most people's nature. It goes against my nature.
100%.
Like, if you're an innocent person and you're just trying to help, there's just that thing in you that's like, I just want to help. I'm just trying to help them. Or surely if I just explain to them what happened, then this will be all cleared up. But it never is. Ugh. It never is.
I mean, maybe sometimes it is, but why take the risk of being a person that it isn't? Ever. Never take the risk.
A big risk to reward
not worth
kind
it.
Of guy.
Yeah. Not yeah, worth it. Like, not worth it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Liz, I hope that clears it up for you. In this episode, Liz also says, I really appreciated, and it's kind of what we were talking about before, I really appreciated Delia's observations about how being a young female interviewer can really put people at ease and even lead them to underestimate her. Does Bob feel like his physical presence sometimes has the opposite effect? Has Erica ever gotten to take a crack at the interviewer role? I'd be curious to know if her experience would differ significantly.
She has not taken the interviewer role. We just talked about this in the pregame, but as of right now, the plan is both Erica and I are going back to school to get our criminal justice degrees to get licensed as private investigators. So in a couple of years, I think that Erica may be in that role where she'll actually be going out and doing interviews on her own. Not right now, she hasn't. I think that Erica's presence with me has helped sometimes. As far as like my physicality when I'm going up to interview somebody, it depends. There's times when it helps and there's times when it hurts. There's sometimes where, think like Jamie Snow case, right? And we're like going to interview these guys from like prison gangs and biker gangs and stuff, you know, and I come in big tattooed guy wearing a Carhartt button up, you know, and I kind of play the part, you know, I try to assess the situation and just try to like talk in a way where I can relate to somebody. And it's been very helpful for me. And there's other times where I'll go to interview somebody where my costume for the day will be long sleeve, button up shirt, no tattoos exposed, try to look, you know, dressed up. I try to be conscious of that. And you got to try to be kind of charming enough to get people to be comfortable with you and open up to you. But there's definitely times, I think, where people look at me and they're immediately on edge. Hmm. Sometimes that's a hindrance. Sometimes it's a help. Sometimes it's, you know, that there's been time, Mike always called it my retired cop costume, you know, when we were working on Jesse's case a lot in that neighborhood. You know, I wore a sidearm and wore my blue BDU pants that I wore when I was on the fire department.
Hmm.
And I looked like a cop when I was up there. And that, you know, again, sometimes that in certain situations that might cause people not to talk to you. In other situations, it causes people to think, oh, I kind of need to talk to him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like,
yeah,
he seems
sure.
to be in a position of authority. But it was interesting to hear Delia's experience with that, because like I said, she's very young. She has a innocent face. She's, you know, she's an attractive young woman. And I think that, yeah, I just loved the fact when she explained that, how people underestimate her.
Yeah.
Because as you know, if anybody's listened to Counterclock, Delia is a badass.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
She is an absolute badass, and she is extremely intelligent, and she is very good at her job. And so I think that underestimation, like, I love how that works in her favor. Like, they're like, oh, this sweet lady wants to talk to me. Of course, I'll talk to her.
Yeah.
What's she going to do? And then she like hammers them. Like,
oh,
it's,
totally.
It's the best.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Colin says, hi, all. Interesting that you brought up whether Delia's cases are investigated in real time or upfront. I'm much more a fan of the real time investigation. I find it easier to buy into as opposed to just hearing a story. With that in mind, can we be brought into the next case earlier than when we were with Jody's, please? And if I could just interject, this question surprised me, Colin, because I felt like we came in super early, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, we did. But the thing with Jody's case is there's always going to be As I'm talking to these attorneys for this next case, I will explain to them, my number one goal, like my last priority is making a podcast. My number one goal is to do the investigative work to find the things that are going to get somebody out of prison. And for example, in Jody's case, like you guys were pretty early, like we weren't fully, you know, we hadn't been through everything in the case file yet. We had just kind of done our initial like reading and screening of it and started in it before we started doing the putting the series together. But in that case, there were people that we needed to talk to that would have been great to do them in real time on the podcast. But I also had all these reports that the police department may in the past have front run people. Like if they hear you're going to go find somebody to talk to them and try to get an affidavit, that they would go ahead of you and try to fend that off, get them not to talk to you or get them not to sign the affidavit.
Hmm.
So, you know, the biggest thing in Jody's case was, you know, the linchpin of their case was Sonia Lucas's testimony. And so and there was a big concern of the people involved in the case that if you announce that you're going to go talk to Sonia Lucas, somebody's going to go talk to her first. Or if people know that you're doing this podcast, they're going to go talk to her first. So in that case, I went to go interview her before anyone ever knew we were doing the podcast. What I didn't expect was that was going to blow the whole case up right there, you know?
Sure.
So it's usually not like that. But I try to do my best to do things. And Erica being here is a help because she's so good at her job, I'm able to do the due diligence of reading through, looking for conflicts, looking for problems, looking for indications that this wasn't a wrongful conviction, where I can still unpack those things kind of in real time on my own. So the case that we're looking at, I haven't read the trial transcripts yet, but Erica has, you know, and so she read them, wrote summaries of everybody's testimony, and then gave me her assessment of how she felt about that. And in this case, she, you know, because I said, you know, you've heard the pitch from the innocent side. Now you've seen the whole prosecution's case. Was there, you know, what was in there, or was there anything in there that made you question whether this is a wrongful conviction? She said, no. I everything I found, and she kind of broke down a couple things that were in there that came out, and she still feels it's a wrongful conviction. So it's kind of getting us into that sweet spot to where now I can still kind of do it in real time with the confidence that I'm not going to be completely blindsided by something later down the road, which I never had because before I was doing all that research on my own as we went. The problem, Colin, is I kind of take it from both sides. So there's like people that are like, we want everything in real time. And in the meantime, there's all these people that are going like, how irresponsible for you to be reporting on this case when you haven't even read the whole case file. So like finding that balance between the two is really difficult. In this case that we're looking at doing, there's probably, you know, like I said, you know, Erica's reading, she'll be further read into it than I will be before we start. But there are already a couple of people that I know we need to interview that we probably need to interview before we start airing any episodes. So some of that are a couple of reasons. Sometimes it's because you don't want somebody front running them. The other thing is, if you're looking for them to explain something to you that could change the outcome of an appeal, what you don't want is for a prosecutor to say, well, she only said that because she heard you say it first on the podcast.
Right, exactly.
Right, so you can't risk, drawing a blank on the word I'm looking for, but you can't manipulate the testimony that's coming, that you're getting out of this person or the statement you're getting out of them by something you said on the podcast. So sometimes we do need to talk to people beforehand before we get that information out of there. So I hope that answers your question, Colin. Like we kind of do our best to kind of hit that sweet spot in the middle.
Well, you know what? He happens to be in the YouTube chat and he said, thanks for explaining that. Oh, yeah. I do appreciate there must be work done behind the scenes first.
Yeah, well, there you go, Colin.
Yeah, all of that makes sense. And, you know, you have been so tight-lipped about this upcoming one, even to Zach and me. I don't know, Zach, if you've pried anything out of him, but...
I don't know anything.
Yeah. Usually, at least we kind of get a little preview, but...
Well, this one's a little different because, you know, I've, with the attorneys that I've spoken to about the case, you know, I've spoken with them with the understanding that until they've given a green light, I won't share anything with anybody about what we're doing. Where a lot of times, you know, that's not the case. Where, you know, there isn't an attorney,
right,
or, you know, we can share at least with you guys. But this one, they've been very clear. You know, we don't. It's a case where like they had kind of decided there will be no media, and then, you know, I come along and now they're thinking that this particular, you know, we're getting a whole, you know, tens of thousands of investigators working on it for us. This may be worth it, and this could be advantageous to us. So for us to have this conversation, we didn't have this conversation type of thing.
Right.
Well, it's crazy because even in the past, even if I don't know something about the case, I at least know where it's at. At least I don't know anything about this case.
Well, that brings me to
It's within 100 miles of us.
Okay. It's in the United States.
Yeah.
This is going to be my last episode. I'm retiring because the only reason that I came on the show was I thought I would get insider information and early. And I'm not seeing that happen right now with this case. So goodbye.
You'll get it before Colin does.
Colin, at least I have that. Colin, at least let me have that for a moment. Mm. Let me have that. Well, that's exciting. And that's all we have from listeners, but a great episode. Always love hearing you talk to a fellow investigative journalist.
So I know this past weekend, you actually went out of town with your students working on the case that they're working on. Could you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah. So we had a really, really cool, I'm very excited. There's starting to be media picking up about, like, there was at this event, there was a journalist from the Cadillac News. There was a journalist from some newspapers that were up there that were doing stories. So we went to the Jeanette Robertson. They did like a walk for justice for her. They do it every year on the anniversary when she was murdered up in Reed City, Michigan. And it was kind of cool because there were reporters that were there to report on that event. And then they see all my students there with recording equipment walking around. They start asking questions about that. And I just got an email today. I'll share it when it comes out. I'll share it on, I might not because, never mind. I don't know. It depends if they're giving away too much information about my students, then I'm not going to share it on our fan page.
Understood and respected.
But, you know, they're kind of making the story about, like, these kids, because this gathering they do every year, it's been kind of from the impression we got that it's from the victim's sister, like the crowds have been dwindling over the years. There's not as many people that are interested. They're kind of feeling. And then, you know, we walked in, you know, I walked in with eight high school students, and Lana's eyes just lit up. She's like, oh my God, there's kids here that are interested in the case. And so we made the 2.5 hour drive up there. We went to, there was like a gathering where Jeanette's sister gave a speech, and then there was a pastor that like did a prayer, and then we did like a march through town, and then we gathered back at the depot where we set everything up, and the kids did, they recorded some interview. They actually got an interview with the lead detective from the Michigan State Police, who's currently working on the case in the cold case unit.
Awesome.
He was super impressed. You know, I think it was kind of one of those where, oh, there's some kids that want to talk to me. Sure. And they're asking some hard hitting
just like we were talking about.
Deep. Yeah. So they interviewed some people who knew Jeanette. They interviewed her sister and the detective, got a bunch of like B-roll audio. And then we actually went to the crime scene and walked through the crime scene where they were doing things like, you know, having people go upstairs and seeing like, can you hear us talking down? We're trying to, you know, when this was going on in the basement, could somebody hear upstairs? There were, you know, actually getting a feel. And then we had a really cool session where we're sitting kind of doing a behavioral analysis where we're doing what I always like to do with a crime, where you're like walking through the crime scene itself and you're like, okay, so like try to put yourself in the mind of the killer here. Like you're in this location, and I don't want to give too much away about the case before they release their podcast, but it's like, okay, like while you're here with the victim, someone came down those stairs and is looking for her, and you can see them through these bird cages. Mm. Like, what are you thinking? How are you getting out of here? And they're like talking through all that stuff. Mm. And it was just really cool too. So when we left, you know, I told them our one of the Zoom recorders we were using as we were leaving, getting back in the van, we were going to start heading back downstate and stop and get dinner. I was like, just leave it rolling.
Yeah.
Because they're talking, and I'm just like driving, and I'm just like listening to them just like picking apart the case and everything they learned. And they were so excited. So it just, I don't know, it's just really cool for me to hear, you know, these young adults that are like this invested in doing something. And then they were interviewed by several people. And when they were being interviewed, like just listening to them respond to it, I was like, I'm just so proud of them. You know, they were, you know, I just heard, you know, this, you know, one student, they were asking her, you know, why did you take the class and why are you doing this? And, you know, are you interested in investigative journalism? She's one who's not particularly interested in being a journalist, But she's like, but I just wanted to do something where I can make a difference in the world.
Oh.
And this is an opportunity for me to do something. I'm gonna help someone. I'm gonna do something. And I'm just sitting there just welling with tears in my eyes, listening to my teenage students all just handle themselves very well. So it was a really cool trip. It's coming out soon. Somebody who wrote an article, one thing they asked, like, what's the name of the podcast going to be? And I don't know. I was like, we haven't decided yet. We do have the feed set up under Bobcat Media. We haven't sent it out, because I think what we're going to do is to establish the feed once we get the name and the logo together, is I'm going to record an intro episode that will explain everything we're doing. That will establish the feed so people can get subscribed before things start coming out. But I know we've got two groups that are damn near ready to record. They're on their final table reads for their first three episodes of their scripts, ready to go. So those are about to come out soon. And then the one that was doing that case, the good news is they got all this material. The bad news is I was just listening to their audio because I was pulling it off the Zooms for them since I was home today. So I was ready for them. And the first thing I hear is one of the students going, we're going to have to rewrite everything.
<Uh-oh>. Welcome to this.
Yeah, they wrote their whole scripts, and now they have all these audio assets now that they picked up on while they're there. So
that's so exciting.
That's
going
to be soon. So it's been awesome. And of course, I'm going to let them decide what they name the podcast. But I was just thinking something. I want something captured in the title that captures the idea of the youth of today being underestimated by the people. When people listen to this and hear this is what these kids that you all shit on all the time and talk about, you think that they're good for nothing. This is what they're, if you give them the opportunity and if you put your faith in them, look what they can do. That seems like a long podcast title, though.
It sure does.
Yeah.
That's what acronyms are for. It's going to be Sirim Pimfata. If you break that down, it means look at these kids today that are doing great work.
Right.
I'm so excited about this, and I just don't think it can be overstated how long-lasting an impact a young person actually feeling and seeing that impact. It can change the person you become. It just can. I mean, it just can't be overstated. Actually being able to see and experience a result, a positive result of something you did that stretches out beyond your own world and your own family and your own scope, it can change the whole trajectory of a young person's life. And when they know they matter and when they know that they can make a difference, I just am so proud of you and I'm so proud of them. And I just can't wait to hear more.
As far as the effect it will have in their life, regardless of what comes from the podcast when it's done, it's not just this group. There's other groups doing, there's five groups total that are doing cases. But I wanted to get them out in the field so they can experience when they walk through that door. And Jeanette's sister just eyes lit up and was so excited that regardless of what else you do, it's kind of like what we were talking about before, regardless of what else comes of this, look what you did for her.
Yes.
She's been in a place where she's just had no hope, feels like nobody cares. Mm. People are drifting away. And it's for her to see eight teenagers come in and say, we don't know what we're going to be able to do, but we are here to help. Was just for them to feel that impact was just amazing to see.
That's beautiful. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah. And with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap this podcast up. I will tell you that this weekend, based on a bunch of listeners, you guys didn't send those recommendations in because I was hooked. Several people through Patreon and through our Facebook page suggested that I get Bob Mata and Lauren Bright Pachenko, who are doing the Murder on Songbird Road podcast, have them come on. So I reached out to Bob. Of course, he's willing to come on. Always love having Bob on the show. And then Monday, I went to the gym and turned on the first episode of it. And I ended up spending 3 hours at the gym up on the track because it's just oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. And there, as of this Thursday, there will be the first four episodes are out. So they're still in the middle of it. You can catch up and binge it.
Awesome.
But Bob and Lauren will be on this Sunday. So that was a really cool conversation. And definitely if you want to pregame for that one, go listen to the Murder on Songbird Road. That's coming Sunday. I have to be out of town for my other work for next week, so I'm recording ahead of time this week. Another one, I had someone weirdly, imagine this, Zach, I went to the P.O. box.
Oh, boy.
Which I never do.
Oh, my goodness.
And there was a...
There was cookies.
There was moldy cookies in there from Kathy from December. No, there wasn't. There was a card and a letter in there from an organization that is trying to help people who are pregnant in prison and doing a bunch of work in that space. And they had just written this nice letter thanking us for the work we do and sent some materials for the work they do. And Eric and I were talking about it. I was like, well, you know, that would be a cool one to have on so people can hear, the whole idea with this season 16 is people that are doing good things. And they seem to be. So that'll be, I'm going to record it this Thursday, but that'll be out next week. So if you're watching this live and you're a patron, you'll be able to join that interview live on Thursday at 12 Eastern time is what I'm going to be recording with that individual. And that's what we got coming for the next couple of weeks. So thank you guys for tuning in. We always appreciate every single one of you guys. And we'll talk to you again on next week's Friday follow-up.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.